This is Nicholas Snow Live, connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com. It's not radio. It's Gadio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Nicholas Snow Live for April 14th at 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Of course, it's already tomorrow in some parts of the world, and this podcast remains available in perpetuity, so listen away. Today's hot topic, really hot, Clifton Tatum's winning of Mr. Palm Springs Leather 2015 in November of 2014 was one more step, albeit a very visible one, in a lifelong journey of being of service. In this episode, we go into the heart and soul of a leather man, dispel myths about the leather community, and give the general public compelling thoughts to ponder. In the competition, in addition to the fashion, posing, and of course the interview question, Clifton spoke of his vision of supporting LGBT youth charities, foster care, and suicide prevention programs, and the fight against bullying. He has remained true to his word. He says, quote, "It has been my experience after working with young people for over 30 years that when given a fair and balanced chance at life, the majority of young people make good choices." So in this episode, we're meeting Clifton Tatum. I can hardly wait. And I'm so glad that you've joined us. Clifton will be on the air with me in just a few minutes.
I want to give a big shout out of thanks to all my advertisers. You'll hear the commercials during the show. If this episode had a presenting sponsor, you would be hearing their commercial right now at the beginning of the show. For information on how to secure this sponsorship, or for the contact information for all my advertisers, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on the advertisers link in the main submenu.
It's time for Nicholas Snow Live, the podcast that's all about connecting the circuitry of humanity. Nicholas broadcasts live almost every day, and he wants you to be a part of the conversation. If you are listening live, the phone lines are open now. Call 347-215-8866. That's 347-215-8866. We're screening calls right now, so get dialing. Call 347-215-8866. While he's screening callers for today's broadcast, here's some important information for you. Nicholas uses both Twitter and Facebook to alert listeners just as he's going on the air. At any time 24/7, you may direct tweet at @TheNicholasSnow or post your questions, comments, breaking news, and gossip on the Nicholas Snow Live Facebook page. Nicholas may very well discuss your tweet or comment on the air. When communicating with or about the show using any form of social media, be sure to use the hashtag NicholasSnowLive. You may also Skype into live broadcast from anywhere in the world. For Skype instructions and to review all the Connect with Show options I've just mentioned, simply visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click Connect with the Show in the main submenu. Nicholas also broadcasts regular video chats and interviews on his YouTube channel using Google Hangout. So subscribe at youtube.com/snowbiznow. That's youtube.com/snowbiznow. For all of his social media links, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Social Networks in the main submenu. And now, on with the snow, show! Celebrating his fourth decade as a multimedia entertainment activist, producer and host Nicholas Snow is all about honoring and expressing his life force in a way that makes a difference, while inspiring you to do the same. Reaching millions of people worldwide, Nicholas is definitely a leading primo promo homo on the go-go. Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just drifted into your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. You know, I have so much fun coming to you with these really interesting and compelling interviews. I want to give a shout out to the Huffington Post and the Gay Voices editor, Noah Michelson, because I launched my new format last week with a daily live show, and all five episodes have been picked up by the Huffington Post, which is really exciting because I do my best to bring you content that is transformative, that truly does connect the circuitry of humanity. And this particular episode is no exception. I mentioned at the top of the show that Clifton Tatum's winning of Mr. Palm Springs Leather 2015, the contest was in November of 2014, was one more step, albeit a very visible one, in a lifelong journey of being of service. In this episode, we go into his heart and soul, dispel myths about the leather community, and give you compelling thoughts to ponder. So in the competition, in addition to fashion, posing, and of course the interview question, Clifton spoke of his vision of supporting LGBT youth charities, foster care, and suicide prevention programs, and the fight against bullying. He has remained true to his word. He says, "It has been my experience after working with young people for over 30 years that when given a fair and balanced chance at life, the majority of young people make good choices. I want you to know I was actually on hand at the contest where Clifton won, and I captured some raw video that is on YouTube. So if you search YouTube with two names, Clifton Tatum, Clifton has one F in it, and Nicholas Snow, you can easily find that video. Welcome to the show, Clifton Tatum. It's great to talk to you. How's it going?
Great, great, great. Nice to chat with you also, Nicholas.
Well, listen, I'm not sure if you were aware, but I first became aware of you because we both go to the same gym, but I'm
okay.
It's sort of a surprise to many that I'm kind of shy in the real world, so I think maybe once I said hello to you at the gym, when I put on my professional hat, I can talk to anyone about anything. And I mentioned to you right after you won that I'd love to have you on the show, and I'm really glad that it's happening. And I want to congratulate you because you did have some big goals in mind in terms of what you wanted to do with your title and the difference that you wanted to make. And you've been really effective in your charity work. So I guess I want to start out by saying for the novice who's tuning into this topic perhaps for the first time, what exactly is a leather competition? What is involved, and who participates?
Well, the leather competition is, well, I guess historically, was just to promote bars. It's an evening of hot leather men giving of their time and energy to promote, hopefully, their own platforms. And enjoy an evening of hot leather outfits and fun questions. It usually starts off with an application. The application will ask you things like, what do you enjoy about wearing leather? What are your sexual fantasies? What would you do if you won the title? So the first run, you come out and you're wearing your everyday cruising outfit. It could be leather chaps. It could be harness. It could be a combination of Levi's and harness. Maybe a leather vest. The second outfit you wear is a jock strap. Depending on where you're from and what bar or city, it depends on how often you how risque you can be. In Palm Springs, we're told to cover our butt crack. So we do wear a one inch piece of material covering our butt crack, and we come out in a jock strap. And now with that jock strap, you can wear a harness, you can wear a hat, you can wear gauntlets on your wrists, gloves, boots, whatever you choose to wear. And usually at that time, they're asking you a sexy question or a funny question for you to kind of speak and see what comes up randomly, and if you can entertain an audience on the fly. The third round is the formal question round. This is a question where they ask you, or you actually present yourself in 90 seconds or less, what you would do if elected Mr. Toolshed Bar or ultimately Mr. Palm Springs Leather. And that's usually done while wearing your formal leather, your nicest leather attire. And then the judges will tally the three areas in addition to tally the stories you receive during the private interview where they ask you more personal questions about your background and your interest in the leather lifestyle. And they reach a score totaling 300 points or more. Sometimes it's 400 points. The point spread the difference from a winner and a loser can be just 3, 4, 5 points. It can be very, very close. So it's not one of these things that you can walk in and easily pick a winner out by looking at them. It has a lot to do with what's in your heart as well.
Oh, I couldn't agree more regarding it having to do with what's in your heart. And I think that that's what would surprise someone that goes to a leather contest for the first time. Mm-hmm. You know, I find it humorous that you refer to everyday leather cruising attire, like we all have that in our closet.
Well, I would hope you would.
Well, you know, maybe I'm a leather boy waiting to come out, but I'm curious if you would, you mentioned the leather lifestyle. What is the leather lifestyle?
Well, a leather lifestyle can surround, I guess it's your relationships with people and your brothers and your tribe. You know, anyone can wear leather and say they're a leather person, but that does not make you a leather person, just wearing it. Wearing leather or wearing leather boots or anything like that is more of a fetish. What happens when you consider yourself a leather person or a part of the leather community, it's about having trust, honor, and respect for the leather history and your brothers. It also has to do with the way you play with leather. When I say play, I mean sexual play, or play in terms of BDSM, which I can go into a little bit later, having to play safe, sane, and consensual, and also having fun. So when you commiserate with your leather brothers or your tribe and you're following the code of ethics of leather people, which is trust, honor, and respect. Because, you know, when you're involved in leather play, you do need to be able to trust, and you do need to honor people's requests and also have respect for who they are. So that's the difference. It's not just putting on leather and calling yourself a leather person. It's also about following the leather ethics as well.
I don't have a judgment about the answer to this next question, but mm-hmm. what percentage of men in relationships who are also in the leather community would be monogamous versus those that would have open relationships, in your opinion?
Yeah.
I know you don't have a scientific survey.
I don't have a scientific survey, and of course the people that I would meet as a single man are either in open relationships or are single. Now the people that are monogamous, well, of course, I'm not going to run into them because they are truly monogamous.
You would run into them perhaps at a contest or at the bar because
fun. Yeah, but in terms of just running into people, you know, I really couldn't answer that question effectively or truthfully.
I guess one way to spin this, no pun intended, is that that I guess you would find that men in the leather community are very open-minded and adventurous.
Yes. Well, yes. Because the leather people are kinky people, we tend to be more accepting. We tend to be more accepting and less judgmental of others. So if someone chooses to be in a relationship and they also choose to have an open relationship, you know, leather people tend not to judge. You know, don't judge unless you'll be judged. You know, like the funny famous quote. So,
you know, I care about whether or not other people are monogamous. It's just that even though I'm fascinated for the by not necessarily by leather itself, but by dominance and submission, people who are maybe more sexually adventurous, I know that in my heart and soul, we're talking about yours, but I want to be in a monogamous relationship. So I just don't quite know how to navigate that particular world in terms of what I'm looking for. But I really appreciate that there is no right or wrong when it comes to the type of relationships that individuals want with consenting adults.
Exactly. And that goes back to what I earlier said about ethics. You know, you have to have some kind of honor and trust for your partner. And if you're saying one thing in your relationship but you're behaving another way, well, then you're violating the code of ethics of your relationship. And so it's very natural for people who are in open relationships to have that trust. But then at the same time, if they don't want to be involved with others sexually, but they do enjoy, say, the bondage, or they do enjoy the flogging, or they do enjoy aspects that don't involve their genitalia, then, you know, is that considered an open relationship? You know, if I say, hey, let's come over, we're going to tie such and such up, and we're going to, you know, drop ice cubes on him, or we're going to rub them down with, say, some kind of paraffin wax. Is that a violation of the trust of our relationship if I say it's okay to be involved in that kind of play? versus being involved with play where your genitalia is involved and then there's sexual relationships involved. And then, you know, it's a different kind of scene completely. And not all leather people, you know, or not all leather play ends with sexual intercourse or genitalia being involved.
Well, this is all very fascinating, but I want to actually change the course of the conversation a little bit because really one of the things that you are doing is a tremendous amount of community service and public awareness, and you have a personal goal of bringing the leather community out of the closet and integrating them into the greater community, and I think you've done a great job of all of that. So why don't you talk about what you have done in this regard since winning the title in November.
Okay, well, I won that title about November 1st, and it was around November 9th or so that my very first public outing was, and that was the Gay Pride Parade, where I walked the parade route rather than rode in a car. And by walking the parade route, I was able to go back and forth and shake people's hands, which I later found that was quite a unique thing to do, and people enjoyed it. A lot of women clapped and applauded like I was. And I was dressed in my leather attire, and, you know, they liked it. I was able to shake hands with friends who I've met in Palm Springs who I hadn't seen in a while. And so the feedback was that I was very approachable and very friendly, and I wasn't sitting in a car trying to be distant and aloof. I enjoyed that kind of feedback, and I continue to do that. When I go into the bars, I try to be as friendly as I can and meet as many people as I can. And also, the first event that I did, which was February 22nd at All Worlds Gym, was a exercise marathon.
You mean at World marathon. Gym? At World Gym.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. I said World. I said Gold Gym.
No, you said World All Worlds. Gym. You said All Worlds sorry. Gym. That's a completely different workout.
That's a different. Yeah, you're right.
Yes,
it's
the World Gym.
The World Gym. And there I had three of the instructors there, Ted Geis, Ian Harris, and Dennis Daniels, and three of the instructors. And they held an exercise marathon that went on about 3 hours. During that three-hour period, we had approximately 25 students. And these were participants. And these participants had gotten pledge sheets. At the end of the 3 hours, when all the pledge sheets were collected, we had raised over $5,000. And that's quite a monumental task, if you ask me, because I was not expecting to raise that much money. And that was my first event. That I don't think anyone in Palm Springs has ever held a leather event outside of a bar or an alcohol setting. So I was quite pleased with that. This gave an opportunity for everyone to see that leather people are fun. They are out and about and not just in dark bars. Then I had other events where I did get involved with the bars. I had a roast at the tool shed where we sold 50-50 raffle tickets, and we had a jockstrap auction. And we also congratulated the career of Chris Reese, the former owner of the tool shed, and we welcomed the new owner of the tool shed, whose name is Jeff. I can't remember. Jeff Doty. Yeah. And at that event, we raised another $1,200. So my total has been about $6,200. John Doty. It was about $6,200. And actually, I've raised a little bit more than that because, oddly enough, all the appearances I've been making throughout the town and my posters, I've on three or four random occasions, just out and about, I've had people tap me on the shoulders and stop me, once at a casino and two different bars, and hand me money. And the reason why they're handing money is because they believed in what I was raising money, my funds for. I can go into that right now.
Yeah, so please the money do. I'm raising, please do.
Yeah, yeah. The charities that I'm working for are all LGBT youth charities, and they all are part of our Coachella Valley. The Trevor Project is the first one. And that's a suicide hotline for LGBTQ kids, and they can be reached at thetrevorproject.org. The second one is For the Children. They're a foster and adoptive parent support group in the Coachella Valley, and their website is forthechildrenfapa.org. The other one is the Center, which is the LGBT Center in Palm Springs here. But the program that I'm actually raising money for is the Suicide Prevention and Anti-Bullying Presentation in the Classroom. And they can be reached at thecenterpf.org. Now, what's unique about that program at the center is that the psychologist trains individuals as well as student therapists, and they go into the freshman classes, and they do a pretest, and the pretest is about what kids know about LGBT kids and what they know about suicide, and they also learn about how words can hurt people. Then they have a day lecture, and they do a follow-up with a post-test, hoping that the kids have made some gains in knowledge and some sensitivities about how words can hurt and also about signs of possible suicide amongst their friends. The fourth one is the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, which is also a nationwide group. They focus on research, prevention, and education, advocacy, and public policy and support. And their website is afst.org. And the final one, which is a new one coming online in Palm Springs, is Sanctuary Palm Springs. It provides a home for youth in foster care who are self-identified as LGBT, intersex, or questioning. And their website is sanctuarypalmsprings.org. And what's unique, unique about them is that they are the very first foster care home for LGBT kids, because it's been known that LGBT kids do receive some form of abuse, either from their peers or in the home, by being gay, and they're often alienated. Another aspect of the Sanctuary of Palm Springs is that they're also going to take kids or help kids who age out of foster programs, because, you know, once you turn 18, you're no longer eligible for foster care. They're going to have a component where they're going to be allowing kids to stay to help themselves get situated before they're put back, you know, to live independently again. So those are the five charities that I'm working for. And the reason why I select those five is I spent, like I said, 30-some-odd years working with young people. 28 of those years was working in the Department of Corrections, the Juvenile Division. And working with kids all these years, I've come to realize that then turn around if they had a fair chance, either at home or education or just family support. So many of these kids were either, especially the LGBT kids, were either kicked out of their home, they suffered bullying, which led to depression, which led to a lack of, you know, fulfilling their educational goals, as well as self-destructive behavior. And, you know, working in that corrections field, I have participated in helping, you know, save kids who attempted suicide. I've also known kids who attempted suicide. And it's such a tragic thing to have happen for them and their families when, you know, you think that something minor, just as, you know, support or some kind of brotherhood or sisterhood they could have had maybe on the streets would have, you know, gave them the self-esteem and the self-confidence to, you know, weather the storm of bullying. Because, you know, we all tolerate bullying, you know, not just kids. I mean, you see it on the internet, you see it in social media, you see it in politics. You know, bullying starts very young and it continues to go to death. It's just a matter of having the confidence and the wherewithal to, you know, sustain who you are and stay focused on what you want out of life and being true to yourself.
Very well stated, and I love that you ended up with being true to yourself, because I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk to Clifton about his personal journey from his own youth to who he is today after this.
Did you know I'm an author? At the time of this recording, I have two books out. The first, a Living Powerfully with HIV memoir called Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. It takes place throughout Asia and even in Palm Springs. It could be called Eat, Pray, Disclose. The second book, A Return to Brokeback Mountain, Photos and Interviews from the Historic Hollywood Premiere. To find these titles, go to nicholassnowlive.com and click on Books in the main submenu. Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch, scrumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
New designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift store. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at RevivalStores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Snow. Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before, and I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
This is Nicholas Snow Live, connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com. It's not radio. It's Gadio.
And we are live today, April 14th, 2015. It's 11:26 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. If you're happening to be listening live and you want to call in with questions or comments, the number is 347-215-8866. I do know that about 98% of people listen to my show after it is live, and I'm happy to say that over 1.7 million people have listened to my podcast in less than 3 years, so thank you for being one of them. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, with my new format, launch of a daily broadcast a week ago, all five episodes of my first week have made it to the Huffington Post, so very excited about that. And equally excited and honored to be speaking with Clifton Tatum, Mr. Palm Springs Leather 2015. Clifton, we all have challenges in coming out and accepting ourselves and beginning to express ourselves authentically in the world. And I know from my friends that people of color have a whole different layer of challenges. And I was wondering if you would speak to your own journey growing up, figuring out who you were, and coming into your own. Because you're certainly, I would say, very much living your truth today.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing coming out. I was born and raised in Ventura County, and I stayed there till I was 40. I was married twice to a woman, and one
to different women, right?
to different women, yeah.
Oh, I got you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I'm saying women, yeah. The difference, I guess, my story is that I didn't really have gay role models, and I really didn't know what it was to be gay. What I saw as a young person growing up in my small town was the typical effeminate homosexual or gay man, and I couldn't identify with that as being something that I was. I couldn't identify with the typical, stereotypical hairdresser and drag queen and effeminate man. So I figured I was something else. I figured I was just a horny guy who liked the visual aspects of a man's body and just was going to go on about my life, you know, dating women and having a, you know, happy marriage. Well, the first marriage didn't last very long. And the second marriage, I moved to Santa Cruz because I took a promotion within my career field. And it was that separation for the first time and the fact that my marriage was kind of going down tubes, that I realized here's an opportunity to explore other aspects of myself. I simply met someone, and it was in the beginning a non-sexual relationship, which is friends. And then once I realized I had fallen in love with my friend, that the feelings I had for men my whole life was more than just curiosity. It was actually, you know, a desire.
How old were you when this happened?
I had turned 40. I was 40 years old. So at 40 years old, I met this gentleman, and I realized I had fallen in love with him, and I had to get divorced because I wasn't going to stay, you know, married to my wife.
Did you tell her why you were getting divorced, or did you come up with other reasons?
Our divorce was based on our incompatibility over the 6.5-year period of our marriage. And so the divorce was second to the gay thing. The incident of falling in love.
But did you ever tell her that this was something?
About a year after our marriage, after our divorce, because we remained friends. You know, I told her that the gentleman who was my best friend at the time I had fallen in love with him, and we did become lovers. And at that point, she wasn't surprised. You know, she sensed that our relationship was much more than just two buddies hanging out going fishing. So from there, now I'm 40, and I'm accepting who I am. And that relationship didn't last for very long, but it gave me the confidence to move on with my life. I think several things gave me the confidence. I think one thing was moving out of my hometown that I had been raised in my whole life allowed me to not have 40 years of history, my family, friends, relatives looking at my behavior. So there was no judgment. I moved into a new town, and I moved to the new town as a gay man. So it was very easy for me just to be assimilated and accepted. I didn't have to find new friends who knew me straight or gay. They just knew me as gay. And working in the Department of Corrections.
I just wanted to ask you, how old are you now?
I'm 57.
So, my goodness, you know, most 30-year-olds would be grateful to be in the shape that you're in. So you've been out now for 17 years.
Yes, I have been, yes.
Well, congratulations. Please continue.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and so, you know, so I'm out as a gay man, and I'm proud and I'm happy, but then I have to find my where do I fit in the gay community? Because, like, you know, as we all know, the gay magazines and the events and the lifestyle tends to focus at the young, physically fit young man, you know, in 25 to 35. So as I go out to gay bars, I'm seeing a lot of young people not really finding my tribe. Eventually, I'm introduced to the leather community. And the leather community and leather bars tended to be older, mature men, which is where I felt I fit in. I also enjoyed the leather. I enjoyed the leather look, the machismo, the swagger of it all. And when I think back, I can remember looking at the old Village People and Glenn Hughes, who was the village singer and the leather man in the Village People Club, and thinking that I really thought he was the sexy one. And then the Tom of Finland in the characters, the cartoons, and the photographs, as well as the drawings, always were very sexy and very, very erotic to me. So here were all these men live and, you know, walking around in leather, and I had an affinity towards hanging out with that group. But how I saw the leather community was through volunteerism, through giving back, and being there for one another. I was not introduced to the leather community as leather sex. I was introduced as a group of people who give back to their community. And that's when I met Sandra Reinhardt. She's also known as Mama from Mama's Family. And I was inducted into Mama's Family, number 403, as Mama's TV.
I should just say that we're referring to a leather family, not the TV show Mama's Family.
Right. I'm sorry. Yes. Mama's Family. Sandra Reinhardt is Mama, and she has over 2,000 people that she's included in her club or organization who all do charity work and support our communities. So that's how I came to know the leather community and leather lifestyle, was in the form of giving back families. in our community.
Well, one of the ways I know that you personally already have a significant following is when a link to a forthcoming show, an upcoming show, is shared on Facebook, people can still click on it, but they don't hear anything. Once the show has broadcast, like right now, if people clicked on the link they see on Facebook, they would be connected to this live broadcast, and afterwards they would hear the broadcast from the beginning. But over 150 people had already tried to listen to this episode before we even went on the air. So just thought I'd throw that out to you. So I want to take one more break, and when we come back, mm-hmm. I want you to tell us what you think some sort of the stereotypical outsider's view of the leather community are, and how those are true and false. So I'm going to be back with Clifton Tatum after this, plus anything else he wants to add, because it's my show and I can take it as long as I want. So I'm going to be back with Clifton Tatum after this.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride Festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
In Greater Palm Springs, since 1979, the Desert Business Association has promoted and supported LGBT and allied businesses and professionals who join together for business promotion, economic development, educational, and humanitarian purposes. Their vision is to connect, promote, and build prosperity by embracing all members of the community to make a positive difference. They have many events every month. Find them at desertbusinessassociation.com.
This is Nicholas Snow Live, connecting the circuitry of humanity. Connect with us at NicholasSnowLive.com. It's not radio, it's Gadio.
And my special guest today is Clifton Tatum, Mr. Palm Springs Leather 2015. Cliff, before we get into the question I posed before the break, you know, fairly soon after you won your title, you participated in the International Mr. Leather Contest.
So that's coming up.
Oh, that's coming up.
That's coming up in May.
Where did you go? Well,
I went from Mr. Toolshed Leather to Mr. Palm Springs Leather Contest. That was about 2 weeks after the first.
Didn't right after you won your title, didn't you go to some major leather event in another city?
I went to Mall on the Mid-Atlantic Leather. That's another contest. But I did not participate in that contest. I went and watched the contest.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you for setting me straight, so to speak. So, you are preparing for International Mr. Leather. So that's an important.
Yes.
Aspect of what you do as Mr. Palm Springs Leather is you're qualified to compete in International Mr. Leather.
Right.
So,
correct.
Why don't you talk about what IML, as it is commonly referred to, is, and how you're preparing, and how a contestant moves through the ranks to ultimately win there.
Well, Mr. International Leather was brought up by Chuck Winslow, and it was primarily designed to promote his bar. Then as they invited more, because, you know, simply you bring on the hot man in your town, you have a bar contest and draws in the crowd and sell more liquor. Then more and more bars were invited. It became a larger and larger event. Then it became international. And now, as we know it today, it's a huge, huge event. And actually, this premise of bringing people in for a bar contest still is happening. The ninth, each individual bar throughout our country and around the world have these events. It does bring a big crowd in to watch the gentlemen parade in their leather and have a contest. So this theory of having a big night at a bar, it still goes on. It just happens throughout the world, or whoever wants to involve himself in the Mr. International leather contest. How I prepare for it, it's simply just knowing my leather history and being who I am. There's no set look. There's no set behavior. There's not a list of tasks you have to accomplish. People tell me, and from what I've seen, you just got to be the best of who you are. The judges will decide that year who they want to represent them throughout, you know, as Mr. International Leather. So I am just being Cliff Tatum and being it with all the passion I've always had, especially for helping young people. And that has something throughout my whole family. You know, I come from a family of public figures who are community involved and community oriented, educators, corrections, civil servants. That's kind of my background, where I've come from. And winning this contest was my stepping stone to doing exactly what I've always wanted to do. I never gave the venue and how I would accomplish the goal much thought. Then all of a sudden I win this contest and I go, that's it. I'm going to take all this notoriety and this platform and give back to the young people who, I guess, made me who I am today through my work and interactions with them for over the 30 years. Watching them struggle has helped me to make good decisions.
When in your career in the corrections, how do you call it, the corrections industry? What is the typical way to refer to it? The system?
I just call it department. I was your correction system. Yeah. I was originally hired as a counselor, and at the time when I was hired, it was called the California Youth Authority. Well, the California Youth Authority was taken over by the Department of Corrections, and now it is the Youth Division of the Department of Corrections. So I was a youth counselor, I was a parole agent, I was a supervisor, I was a manager, I was a training officer. I had many titles throughout my career.
And you were always dealing with youth.
I was always dealing with youth. I found that I enjoyed working with people under 25 more so than dealing with people who were there when I would start my career in my 20s, and be there when I leave at 50. That would have been too depressing for me. I like the idea of watching young people grow and make changes and have those aha moments where they get it. You need to like click on in their eyes and go, oh, you mean what I'm doing isn't working? No, what you're doing is not working, you know? So I've enjoyed working with young people in that aspect, because they are open to change and they are willing to learn and they are willing to listen when they respect who's giving them the message.
I certainly understand the professional role and all of the appropriate boundaries that exist in that role. I am in a position now where I'm working professionally with young adults, and so I get the distinction between personal and professional roles, and I also do not advocate adult sexual activity with children. But with that said, the point that I want to make is, if I was working with all of those men for decades, I think that I would have known before I was 40 that I was gay.
Well, you know what? When I was at work, sex was not on my mind. The Hollywood and the novels, they tend to make the prison setting filled with men for homosexuals to be a very erotic situation. And there's nothing erotic about it. When you're working with people who are serious offenders, who've done serious offenses, who would do harm to you if given the chance, if you got in their way, you just don't think. I have never thought about it in a sexual way. Now, there are people, both men and women, working in the facility. There have been times where inappropriate relationships, you know, did happen, and those people were, you know, removed from employment. But in general, most gay men that I have met have very skewed ideas about what it's like to be in a prison. I think primarily when people think of that, they think of it as being very controlled. Like, well, I'm going to go to prison. How sexy would that be? Yeah, in your mind, it's because you're in control in your mind. But to be in a situation where someone's telling you when to get up, when to go to bed, when to brush your teeth, when to eat, there's nothing sexy or sexual about the whole experience at all.
I would concur with you, but the point that I'm trying to make is that if I was around men all the time, if I was around men all of the time, I think that I would just become aware before the age of 40 that I was sexually attracted to them.
I answer that question because I asked myself that question, and I think the answer was I was never attracted to young guys. I think when I came out in my 40s, it's because my peer group was now mature men. At that point, I found gay men attractive. As a young person, I thought male bodies were, you know, interesting or sexy or whatever, but not enough to say that I was gay. You know, I just didn't find my own young peers sexually satisfying enough to say I'm gay or intriguing enough. But when I became older in my, you know, late 30s, early 40s is when I thought, maybe there's something here.
That's
but at
really
the same
a good
time,
point.
Because I'm working with guys 18, 25, and there was nothing sexy about an 18-year-old boy, a 25-year-old boy who didn't have an education, didn't have a career, didn't have his stuff together. I personally did not find that attractive at all. However, as I got older, in my 30s, late 30s, you know, or 40s, that's when I started to think that maybe there's something there. But even then, I didn't act on it because I just didn't feel it strong enough.
Just in case there's any confusion in the mind of the listeners at my line of questioning, I personally believe that the sanctity of a therapeutic relationship is paramount, and that there's tremendous amount of ethics involved. And in my own helping profession, also the last thing on my mind is sex as well. And I'm really focused on my love and compassion for people that are dealing with immense challenges.
Correct.
But I do like that we've explored this whole kind of fantasy take on it. And that leads me to the other thing I wanted to talk about. I think that there are myths and realities that people perceive about the leather community. And I'm wondering what you thought the leather community was, or what you think people think the leather community is, and how it truly is different.
My assumption is that people who don't know may think we're a bunch of guys dressed up in leather, doing drugs, beating on each other senselessly, dirty, uneducated, you know, kind of like, you know, like the most subversive group of gay men.
Like cavemen with a better wardrobe.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you think about it, very, very expensive wardrobe. You know, you see men dressed in full leather, you're looking at $2,000 or $3,000 worth of clothing. So these people have jobs and careers. They were also on the forefront of the HIV breakout, and so they were also part of the first group that got with other gay organizations to form these advocacy groups and do politicking and hitting the streets and marching to bring notoriety and hopefully an end to the AIDS. And bring about more HIV awareness. So if in fact leather men were doing such harm to each other, it would have died out long ago. But it's more of a parody. When people from the outside are looking at two men, if they have the opportunity to look at two men who are engaged in an S&M scene or a bondage scene, what they don't realize is that there's a lot of negotiating going on beforehand, you know, the discussion of limits, you know, what I can take, what you can give. Because just because you're a top does not mean you can deal out any kind of amount of pain. I mean, as a top, you also have limits of lines that you won't cross. And as a bottom, you have lines that you won't cross. But just like anyone, we all have different levels of tolerance. A professional football player can tolerate a lot more pain than I could playing football. You know, anyone who's looking for an adrenaline rush jumping out of an airplane with a parachute can handle much more of a rush than I can. So in all sports and all activities that are out there, people involve themselves for the endorphin rush. It's all the degrees and what you're comfortable with. But, of course, what's shown are the extremes. No one wants to watch a bunch of guys playing football on the weekend, but we do watch professional football. It's all about your own level of tolerance. So I don't know if I've generalized things here rather quickly.
No, that's okay. Is there anything about your background, your current work, or the leather community you'd like to talk about that we haven't addressed?
Well, one of the things, Mr. Palm Springs Leather Weekend is coming up again. It'll be coming up October 28th, 29th, 30th, and November 1st. And that weekend is put on by the Palm Springs Leather Order of the Desert, PSLOD. And the tickets for that event will be going on sale in May. That's when I'll be doing my step-down speech, and I will also be awarding all the funds that I raise for my charities will be given out at that point. I'm hoping to raise at least $25,000. I have some more events coming up on May the 2nd. I have a Domination Submission Wrestling Exhibition taking place at the Barracks Bar on May 2nd from 8 to 11. That should be a lot of fun. Dr. Alex Del Rosario will be wrestling against me as my opponent, as well as other known gentlemen in town. I also have some other events planned beyond that. I have a heartthrob dinner auction coming up. That's going to be held July the 5th at the Copa Restaurant and Nightclub. More details will come on that, come out about that as they are approved and I get my final list of heartthrobs to participate. And I'll be having some more smaller events as well, hopefully hitting my number of 25,000 for the end of my year, my title year.
And do you happen to know, has any previous Mr. Palm Springs Leather raised that kind of money?
The most I've been told that has been ever been raised by an individual during their title year was $5,000.
So you succeeded that in one event. You matched that in one event.
Right. Yeah.
Those are some tough boots to fill.
Well, the thing is that, see, the difference approach I had is I involved the whole community because, to me, the charities that I'm working for are for our community. It's not the leather men's charities. It's youth charity, and youth come from every aspect of our community, not just one area. We all have to support our youth. They're our future. To me, young people who survive to become adults, who survive the bullying, who survive the suicide, survive the depression, survive the antisocial isolation and become adults, well, those kids out there today are dealing with the same things that we dealt with many years ago, but now they're dealing with social media, they're dealing and the media on TV and just an amazing amount of pressure. When I was a kid, and anyone teased me, you go home to your family, and from the hours of 3 in the afternoon to the next day, 8 o'clock, you didn't hear from anybody. You can get your head together. You can play sports. You can do your homework. You can do a variety of things. But nowadays, you can be bullied at school all day. Get on your phone. There's bullying there. Get home on your computer. There's more bullying there. And hopefully you have a family that is supportive. And if you don't have a family that's being supported, you may be being bullied by your own family. So it's nonstop. This kid who's being bullied or is depressed is trapped in a bubble and they can't get out. So I feel my heart goes out to kids nowadays who don't fit the guidelines of what other teenagers expect. The little kids who may be effeminate or may dress a little differently or may speak with a different tone in their voice. This kid is a kid who's going to grow up, hopefully, and survive. And it will be the one that makes it easier for guys like me who come out late in life, guys who aren't easily identifiable as gay or aren't identified as transgender like many of our athletes who are gay or transgendered. So, these little kids who don't fit the guidelines, who don't fit the stereotype of a normal teenage child are the ones who are fighting the good fight. They're the ones who are providing the rights and privileges of us to be who we are. I mean, if the gay community depended on me to be their spokesman, we never would have gotten our rights at this point. Hell, I was 40 years old before I came out, but I felt comfortable coming out when I did because of all the people who were there before me who cleared the way and said, it's okay to be gay. You know, like I said, these young kids today who aren't hiding in the shadows, who are actually out there visible, fighting a good fight, hopefully become our leaders in the future because they have the passion and the understanding of what it is to survive. And I just
everything
hope that the community continues. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, everything you said is really powerful and on target, and I don't need to add anything to what you've said. You've just really done a great job of outlining the issues and speaking about so many different viewpoints. So thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Nicholas. I appreciate the opportunity to get on the phone and talk with you.
So people can see all of the pics from the night you won at DesertLeatherPride.com.
Yes.
Palm Springs Leather Order of the Desert has a Facebook page, and their website is PSLOD.com, or maybe it's .org. Do you happen to know?
The website for PSLOD is .com.
Okay.
I'm sorry, .org. .org.
Okay, I just looked at it, but then I went to another page. Oh, here it is. It's PSLOD.com, actually. Maybe .org goes there as well. I'm going to check right now. PSLOD.org, both of them. .com and .org will take you to Palm Springs Leather Order of the Desert.
Yeah,
it is.
Good.
And do you have a public website or Facebook page?
You know what? It's so funny because when I first won the title, I asked a friend of mine who's very public, and he says, Cliff, some people will have two separate because they want to keep their lives separate. But you've lived your life kind of out in the open and unashamedly. So if you want to use it all in one, that's fine for me. So I'm just Clifton Tatum, CLIFCONTATUM, on my Facebook. And all my new leather friends are mixed in there with my family. Because I consider them all my family.
I love that, actually. Yeah. I also, one of the things I've worked on for decades is to have an integrated life where I could be myself authentically at all times with all people.
Yes.
And that's
the most genuine way to live. I know that since I've done that myself, the universe has provided me so many opportunities and so many wonderful gifts, you know. And it seems to me, and this is something my parents taught me as a young kid, but I didn't believe them, you know what I mean? And now I'm coming to realize that, yeah, the more good I put out there, it just comes back and just grows. And it's like the more I put out, the more it comes back. Yeah, it's a back-and-forth situation. It's an amazing exchange that I have. So, yes, my public and private Facebook is all one Facebook. And if anyone gets out of line on my Facebook page, which I haven't had happen, I'll just delete.
Just block their asses. No flogging allowed.
Oh, there may be flogging involved. I can't promise that.
But that's isn't that rewarding them? Yes. Yeah, that's rewarding them, you see. So that's why you have to block them and not flog them.
Okay, block and not flog. Okay, that may be the problem then. Okay.
Yeah. So, well, thank you so much for being on the show. I'll definitely come up and say hello to you the next time we see each other in person. And I appreciate
that's all
you're doing for the community.
Thank you.
So I hope you have a wonderful day.
All right, you too, Nicholas. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Clifton Tatum, Mr. Palm Springs Leather, 2015. I really, I've interviewed people in the LGBT community for decades, often on live television, now on live radio. I thought that my show would become shorter with a new format, but I frankly think that when you're talking with someone who's passionate and compassionate and intriguing, that it's easy to fill up an entire hour. So I appreciate Clifton taking his time to be with us today. And I want to remind you that every single episode that I produce can be shared via social networking in many, many different ways. You all know how to do that, I'm sure. If you have comments about anything, put them on my Facebook page. Tomorrow, I'll have Ted Allen, Food Network star, talking about Dining Out for Life, happening throughout most of the country and in Canada on April 30th. Check out diningoutforlife.com for more.
You've been listening to Nicholas Snow Live. Find all of our advertisers and everything Nicholas Snow at NicholasSnowLive.com. Nicholas uses both Twitter and Facebook to alert listeners just as he's going on the air. Anytime, 24/7, you may direct tweet at TheNicholasSnow or post your questions, comments, breaking news, and gossip on the Nicholas Snow Live Facebook page. Nicholas may very well discuss your tweet or comment on the air. When communicating with or about the show using any form of social media, be sure to use the hashtag NicholasSnowLive. You may also Skype into live broadcast from anywhere in the world. For Skype instructions and to review all the Connect with Show options I've just mentioned, simply visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click Connect with the Show in the main submenu. Nicholas also broadcasts regular video chats and interviews on his YouTube channel using Google Hangouts. So subscribe at youtube.com/snowbiznow. That's youtube.com/snowbiznow. For all of his social media links, visit NicholasSnowLive.com and click on Social Networks in the main submenu. This show is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. All rights reserved. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.